It was early on in my career, and at that time I only offered one show, which was a 30-minute children's magic show with audience participation and birthday kid at the end. So an Indian gentleman booked me for the show, and I completed the show, and I think it went very well, and the client came up to me afterwards and said, you deceived me. And I said, I'm sorry. And he said, well, you only did 27 minutes and 32 seconds, and the show is for 30 minutes, so, you know, you've shortchanged me. And I said, it's a live show, so, you know, there is flexibility. We can't, you know, we can't start and stop right in the dot. And he said, no. And so I said, okay, so, you know, why don't you take my show fee, which is 600 Hong Kong dollars, divided by 30 minutes, and then multiply it by 27.3, and, you know, just give me the difference. Which he did, okay, which he did.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, I left the show, and I said to myself, you know, if you ever hire me back again, I'm ready for you, mate. And as karma would have it, the next year, he booked me again. I didn't mention what happened the year before, but this time I was ready. So when he took out his little stopwatch at the beginning of my show, I whipped out a really large stopwatch, plonked it on my table, and said, are you ready? Let's synchronize. So when he started his stopwatch, I started it. We went through the show, and this time I altered the pace, so it's a little bit slower. So the birthday child was standing in front of the audience. He had my magic hat on, he had the cape on, the wand, and he was just about to produce the bunny. And off goes my timer. So I stopped and I said, okay, thank you very much for the show. I took the hat off the kid. So he was standing there with his mouth open, holding the magic wand, and saying to his father, Daddy, what's going on? The father comes up to me and says, sotto voce, he says, what are you doing? Do you have you finished the trick? I said, hey, 30 minutes. You paid for 30 minutes. He said, well, what can you do? I said, okay, this trick's going to last approximately 5 minutes now. So you take my 600, multiply by 30, divided by 30, multiplied by 35. And he had no choice. I got him by the balls. Yeah, so never mess with the magician. Yeah. That was a funny one.
Hello, it is I, Big Ben, and this is Meet the Entertainers. Now, to keep my costs down, not every episode is available as a downloadable podcast, but there's always a YouTube version available on my website, as well as detailed show notes containing all the names and all the resources mentioned in each interview. So go to thebigbenshow.com and click away. Alrighty, so this week we're talking to Bernardo, and I just want to say two things, or maybe a bit more, because he's amazing. The first thing is, he does his birthday party backwards. Listen out, it's really cool. And the second thing is, although he has a website and social media, he doesn't rely on it totally. In fact, he does a lot of real marketing, face-to-face stuff with hard copies of props containing his contact details and prizes containing his contact details. So listen hard and learn. Alrighty, let's talk to this amazing guy. Bernardo, take it away, buddy. Your stage name is Bernardo.
Yeah.
But your real name is Bernard.
Bernard, yeah. But like I said, adding an O onto something always makes it a little bit more mysterious.
That's right. You become an instant magician, entertainer, Bernardo.
Or a stripper.
Yeah, yeah, we'll talk about Mike Abbott stripping later. Yeah. Stay tuned. Mike Abbott and stripping stories. All right. So for people, I mean, there's probably everybody knows exactly who you are all around the world. But for someone who doesn't know who you are, what kind of entertainment do you do?
Well, I always say what I do is I provide magical entertainment. So basically, magic is the vehicle for me to provide entertainment. And the entertainment value is not just the tricks that I do, you know, all the props that I use and everything. So if I can get like 5 minutes out of a magic wand or a spring snake, I would use it. So what I always say is, it's not the destination that matters, but the journey we take the audience through. So the destination is, for example, the climax of a magic trick, you know, the production of the rabbit or the vanish. But it's the fun and the laughter that you can have along the way with the kids. So even if the, of course, in a magic show, the magic element is very important. So what I've seen is a lot of shows where there's not a lot of magic. There's a lot of laughter. But at the end of the day, the client is going to say, look, we're not hiring a comedian. We're hiring a magician. So if you advertise yourself as a magician, you need to provide magic. And so what my focus of the show in the past 30 years has changed. Before, it's all about me. I'm the star. I'm the magician. Look at me. Look at all the things I can do.
Okay.
But now my advertising focuses around the fact that the birthday child is the star. So my job is to make your child shine even brighter on his or her special day. So I basically facilitate the child to become the magician. And if anything is going to fall apart, like a wand or any kind of gags, I'm the fall guy. It happens to me. Yes. So the concept is that the kids look at this adult, and he's bumbling and fumbling his way through. And the only way the tricks work is when the kids say the magic word or wave the magic wand. Yeah. And so it's empowerment to the kids.
Yeah.
And parents like that. And for kids, they're in a world where, you know, adults are so capable. And, you know, when you're a kid, you look at adults and they look like they can do everything. And then you have this adult fumbling and bumbling. And that switch, to me, has made all the difference.
Okay, so there are three things there. There's it's the journey is very important.
More than the destination, I'd
say. So, sure, you have the big finish of the magic trick, but it's you enjoy all the gags and the process you can put in it. And then as you became a hired studied to be hired for birthday parties, you realised that actually it's about the birthday kid.
And once you get that that paradigm shift, then business booms. Because parents see their child as being the star. And they're not the magician, but the child.
Yeah.
And every parent wants their child to shine. Yes. That's why they splash out the big money. That's why they book the huge venues. It's all about keeping it with the Joneses. It's all about, you know, one-upmanship. So if they have this magician, but unless I'm David Copperfield, of course, it's a big difference, right? Yes. If not, I'm just a journeyman magician. So how do I get the business? By putting the kid first.
Putting the kid first. Are there any specific ways you put the kid first? Is it your first volunteer? Is it your main
volunteer? Well, there are different kinds of shows, but there's a show that's becoming more and more prevalent, and I call it the Pharaoh Show. I give nicknames to all my shows. Yeah. And the Pharaoh Show is the one where when you come into setup, you know that there's this huge life-size banner, okay? And when adults come, they pay tribute to the Pharaoh. You know, they come bearing gifts to the birthday child, and the whole... the whole function is centered around him or her.
Okay, so when you're saying the Pharaoh show,
means he's the king.
It's when the parents are treating the child like the Pharaoh.
Yeah, and
like
all the games the kid must win.
Yeah.
He must do all the show from the beginning to the end. He's the only audience member there, but he will invite other friends to help him perform the magic. But it's all about him, and it's all about him from beginning to end. And that's the only way you can have the shows. Otherwise, parents will come and say, we paid so much money, why did my son only have one part in the show? And other kids will be looking, and sometimes they'll say, why can't we have a part? And I said, sure you can. Here's my card, book me, and you'll be the star of the next show. And they'll go home and they'll tell their moms, and again, that's... Kids, I mean, like I was saying, I had a lecture where I talked about my marketing strategies to local magicians last Friday. And what I stressed to them was that, okay, with social media, everyone's focusing on advertising and having a Facebook presence, blah, 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 including myself. But the best form of advertising is still old school. Do a good show, and the kids go home talking about you to their parents. And that will get you the shows.
Yeah, I want to talk about some things I've seen of you on some videos. Mm-hmm. You give out like little magic wands that have your contact details inside?
Yeah, I give magic wands. Everything that I give out must have a promotional value.
Right.
You know, I'm not that altruistic. You know, I'm not gonna print things. So normally we get questions, kids asking, you know, oh, can you teach me a magic trick? Or, you know, I want to learn magic. We don't have time to stop and teach them tricks. And also, a lot of tricks are not ours to give away. We stand on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah.
And so, but there are tricks that are in the public domain.
Yes.
And so what I do is I collate them. I put them into like brochures, leaflets. I have like a large magic dollar at the back. There are five magic tricks. And I wrote a small magic book with the tricks. And so I give these out, you know, because if you give a business card, it doesn't mean anything to the kid.
Right.
But if you give him a little magic wand, on there is, when he unrolls the magic wand, it's like a little scroll, and there's a magic trick in there.
Right.
And then there's my name and phone number website on the edge.
That's
and
fantastic.
They go home with the parents. So it's promotion, but it's not blatant. It's very subtle promotion.
Yes, but I saw two things. I saw you giving out these little tiny magic wands, which I presume... is a paper that's rolled up.
So well, when we finish, I'll show you.
It looks like a magic wand.
Yeah.
But then if they unroll it, there's a magic trick in there.
And I have like five or six different tricks.
That's
and
so
then
cool.
And then I also have like lots of giveaways, small tricks that they got to kind of peel away, and it's like a, it's folded, and inside are the actual props
now,
of the
drinks. Do you make these yourself?
Or no,
you
usually I source them, and then what I do is I have printed stickers with my name and photo and logo, and I just stick them on so they become mine.
And do you, is there something like bigger you gave out, like a brochure?
Yeah, yeah, there's a brochure, but at the back there's an activity sheet. So there's like join the dots, spot the difference, and there's two magicians of me, of course, but subtle differences, like one less finger and things like that.
Right.
And crosswords and stuff. And so it's like what you find on in restaurants where they give out to kids. But when you turn it over and open it up, there's me in glorious color.
What a great way to market yourself.
Yeah. So I believe that, okay, the best marketing tool is your show. You know, you can have all the marketing and you do a lousy show and you'll never be invited back. But how can you take your show to the parents that aren't there? Mm. You go through the kids. They're the best messages.
Yeah.
And I've had parents say, you know, we've had that darn activity sheet stuck on our refrigerator for the past 3 years. You know, the kid won't take it down.
Yeah.
Because at the back is a picture of me to color.
Yeah.
Of course, I become all grotesque colors of the universe, but you know, it's there. I implant a memory in them.
Wow.
And, it takes time to bear fruit. I remember one magician saying, "Oh, how fast can I get a return?" I said, "It takes time. It may take half a year."
Yeah. So does it actually bear fruit?
It does. What it is, I track where my shows come from. Do they come from my website? Do they come from word of mouth recommendation? Do they come through advertising, promotional material?
So when someone contacts you, you'll check. So how did you
And also on my website, it's how did you find me?
Right.
And it's important, I think, to track. Otherwise, you don't know
which method's working.
Yeah, because like when I started, when there wasn't, we're talking in the 80s, there was no no internet or anything. So there was this magazine that would be sent free to expats called The Dollar Saver.
Right.
And in there you could buy small ads. So that's where we started off.
Yeah.
And Yellow Pages. Yeah. But like now,
nobody
what's the point?
Uses that. Yeah.
So like I said, don't. It's like you need to diversify how you advertise. And social media has its place, but it's not the only place.
Not the only way.
Yeah. But a lot of people, especially the new generation, think that it's all there in Facebook. But actually, the number of people who really book you through Facebook, not many. So why do I maintain a website? Because it's your presence on the internet.
Yeah.
It's there so that... And then I came up with this... I don't know if I showed you. I came up with this app. I collaborated with a magician in the States. And we came up with this app for me. And... it's again, it's tricks that are in the public domain.
He's opening up an app on his phone.
Yeah, and so it's like tricks on the public domain.
Oh yeah.
And they can play these kind of interactive games, and it all ends back, guess where? It all ends back on my website. Every page goes back to my website, and so they automatic. And it's a free app that they download from App Store. And
so who would you give this to? Some
clients, people who send inquiries, and I just send
by
them
by the way,
app.
Here's an app you can download.
And it's fun. And then it just goes
That's
back to
fantastic. Our fantastic.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, thank you. So what we need to do is we need to embrace the new technology, but don't forget the old technology.
Word of
What's
mouth.
The phrase? Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what it's
saying. Yeah, I agree.
And,
do a good show.
And I think for our generation, it's the best because we straddle the low-tech world and the high-tech world.
Yeah.
And we know what works from both, but the new generation, all they know is the new way, and they don't know the old way. Mm-hmm. And because I'm also a teacher, so my magic book is very important to me because it promotes reading. And I think that's where a lot of magicians began their love for magic, a book from the library.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's my way of giving back to the art by giving them something to read rather than another download.
Yeah.
And another YouTube link. There's too many of them.
That's fantastic.
That's what I believe.
Here's something I like to ask in this season of the podcast. What is in your bag? Something unusual, something specific. You were showing me something.
Oh, yeah. My stool. My multicolored plastic folding stool.
How old is this?
About 20 years, I'd say.
Still 20 years.
I bought it in China.
Still looks brand new.
Yeah. And it's always in my... I always carry a knapsack to shows. And this is the first thing that ever goes into my knapsack. It's multifunctional. It serves as a stool that
I just describe it. It's a little plastic stool. It's only it's like about
9 inches
high, but it folds up totally flat.
Yeah, so it's kind of like almost like an A4 size.
Yeah, A4 folds up
handle,
A4 size flat.
It's very super light.
Okay, and why would you carry a little stool with you?
Like I said, sometimes when we set up in very unpredictable venues.
Yeah.
And sometimes they give us hardly any space.
Yeah.
And so when I need to set up, I need to sit down for a while. I need to make sure everything is in place.
Mm.
And also, it serves as a stand for my amplifier.
Yeah.
I always ask for a spare chair, but you know, sometimes they don't provide it.
So you can put your amplifier
on
that.
So because if the amplifier touches the ground, especially in an outdoor show, it could get wet, you know, the grass onto it. And
that's
so
right.
I need to, and also a little higher, the sound goes a little further.
Projects further, yeah. That
so,
does.
Yeah, so, it, and it's also can be used as a weapon if necessary.
No, I've actually, at various points of my career, made a folding cardboard box that doubled up as a box for my glove puppet and also doubled up as a something to put my speaker on. So I had the same
concept. But I always say, why reinvent the wheel? I'm not a very creative person. So what I do, I don't come up with magic tricks. I collate and I combine.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm not really a creator. I stand on the shoulders of giants.
That's brilliant. Before we move on, anything else? I mean, I'm fascinated. Anything else really unusual that you have in your bag?
Well, because of Hong Kong's humidity, so I always have these wipes, and the brand that I use is a Japanese brand called Gatsby, because it comes in menthol flavor,
yeah.
And it's very cool and relaxing. So after the show, or in between, if I have 2 gigs or 3 gigs in a day, then in the cab, I would wipe my face, and then also a larger one for the, you know, the body, the chest area, and wipe some of the sweat off, and also give you kind of a cooling feeling.
Yeah.
And I find that really super important.
So you can arrive looking slightly fresher.
Yeah, and it's not just a hand wipe. Hand wipes don't do the job. You've got to have specific ones. So I have 3 hand wipes, face wipes, and body wipes, and probably baby wipes too if I need
them. You have 3 kinds?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's put into a Ziploc bag,
yeah.
And also kept in my knapsack.
When I performed in Singapore, it was so hot and humid all year round that I always performed with tennis players' wristbands so that I didn't drop my juggling clubs because my hands used to get too sweaty without the sweatbands.
I haven't had that problem, but another thing that I always carry are also protein bars.
Oh, yeah.
Because we've got to get the energy level up, and especially sometimes you can't eat. I don't really like to eat just before a show. And I don't like to eat because you're in contact with children, and so
I always travel with food as well. All right, yeah. Yes, I think it's important to carry wet wipes to keep yourself fresh.
Yeah, definitely. And sometimes you end up. Once I ended up in a toilet, and there was no toilet paper.
Yeah.
So what do you do, right? Yeah. So yeah, you never know. So as the Boy Scouts say, be prepared.
Or if you floss your magic handkerchief, wet wipes.
Yeah, wet wipes. Wet wipes are, you know, out of the way.
Now, I'm going to bow down.
Woo. Oh, please.
You've had, 30 years career?
Yeah. I guess you'll probably get around to a question where you asked me how I got started, so...
You can say it now if you want. How did enough did you get started?
Well, actually, when I was a child, I was extremely introverted, okay?
Yeah.
I was an only child, and my dad lived separate from us. He lived in... He lives in the Philippines where he has a law practice.
Yeah.
And so he would come to visit us only a few times a year. And so I lived with my mom.
In Hong Kong?
Yeah, in Hong Kong. And I was an only child, so I was very, very introverted. And it got to the point where when my mom's friends came, I would hide myself in the bathroom. And when there's only one bathroom, that does cause problems. and so when I was about 8, my mom took me to a psychiatrist, a child psychologist. And they tried to figure out what the problem was.
Yeah.
And that psychologist was also a magician. And I still remember the trick that he did. He borrowed my mom's wedding ring, put it in the handkerchief, made it disappear, and it was found in the center of an orange. That was a trick that I still always do.
Yeah.
Sometimes with a ring, sometimes with a card. It's what we call the impossible location.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, to fast forward, so what the psychologist said is that I need a hobby that will bring me out of my shell. Not a passive hobby like stamp collecting or coin collecting, some kind of performing hobby.
Yeah.
And so he introduced magic to me, books in the library. And what I found was that when I performed, I would gain the applause of my peers. And we're always like 1 or 2 steps ahead of the audience, so they can never catch us, and that way it gives you kind of a sense of satisfaction.
Right.
Then when I found out that we can make money from it, those wheels started turning. And it actually paid my way through university and through grad school as well.
How did you find you could make money? How did that happen? Was there a turning point?
I guess my turning point was, you know how they have these annual fairs or spring fairs in schools?
Yeah.
And students are encouraged to come up with like stalls.
Yes.
So like game stalls and stuff. Yeah. And I said, I think it was in form two or form three, and I said to my mates, I said, look, why don't we like...
What is form two and form three?
Grades eight and
how
nine.
How old?
Oh, I was about 13, 14. Yeah. Okay. And I said to my mates, I said, look, you know, this... kind of pin the tail on the donkey and this kind of kind of sideshow stalls aren't going to make a lot of money, yeah. Right? So why don't we borrow the lecture hall, which sat about, you know, 50 people, and why don't we run magic shows every half an hour?
Yeah.
And I'll do the magic shows. And they said, okay, but we need like an attractive... So I said, what about swallowing razor blades? Right? So I researched on that and I figured out how it was done.
Yeah.
And on my first show, what I do, I cut myself, right?
Yeah.
And then the blood, it became the color changing razor blades, right? And so like blood was spurting, and so the next show was jam packed because they wanted to see this blithering idiot.
Yeah.
For $5, you could watch this stupid idiot carve his mouth open. So we would give back money to the school, but we'd keep a little bit on the side. And so I found out, and then I was probably one of the first generation of balloon twisters in Hong Kong.
Ah.
And I was taught by an Englishman who worked in the army.
Okay.
His name was Morris Roberts, and he's still around in the UK. He taught
me... Say the name again?
Morris Roberts.
Morris Roberts.
Yeah, Morris Roberts. And Morris is in Morris Gibb.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he taught me how to make balloon animals. And at that time, there were no pumps. So he taught me how to blow manually, which is quite impressive.
Yes.
To people. I don't know about nowadays, but at that time, to be able to blow a balloon, and he taught me very simple balloon animals. So I would dress up as a clown, I would go to the waterfront, and I would basically busk. And when the cops came, I would put on my American accent and say, hey man, what's your problem? We do this in the States all the time. You mean I can't do this here? Oh man, sorry bro, and then just walk off. Right? And I was charging $5 for an animal in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, then I found out, and then I would do kids' parties as well. And then,
so you started getting asked to be doing these parties.
And then I also did some cabaret, a local cabaret in nightclubs. And,
right.
And so, yeah. But then I decided to specialize on kids shows because I really believe that children's entertainment, no matter how bad the economy goes, being a parent yourself, you know that you won't skint on your kids.
No.
Right? And sometimes I'll have a parent saying, oh, you know, you're $3,000 for a kid's show. And I said, not a kid's show. Your kids.
Yeah.
I say, you're too much of a cheapskate to pay $3,000 for once a year to bring joy and happiness to your child. You know, you got to think about that, right?
Yeah. And also,
I don't mind shaming them.
With the kids show, there's a new generation born every year.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's just, with the corporate clients, they want a new show every year, and you can't make a whole new show every year.
There was a famous magician in the UK in the early 20th century called David Devant.
Mm.
And he was approached by an amateur magician who came up to him and said, Mr. Devant, how many tricks do you do? I do like 100. And Devant looks at him and says, I do 8.
Yeah.
Right? And so the concept is you don't need to change your act, change the audience. Right?
There you
so
are.
So that's what I do. Of course, I keep all my shows on file.
So what you're saying, you could do the same eight tricks year after year because the audience is...
Well, I have...
these new kids each year. Is that what you're saying?
Well, what I do is I cycle. So I have 3 shows. So every 3 years... I can bring back the same show.
Yeah.
And I also divide my audience into 3 separate age groups with different shows for each age group. Yeah. Because each age group has different manual skills, has different thinking skills. And for example, if you're going to do a card trick, can't do it for a kid less than 7 years old because they can't identify the different suits.
Yes.
But you can do where blacks and red cards change color. And then it's a matter of color change rather than remembering numbers. And like dexterity, like cutting a rope. Anything under 8, they won't be able to cut the rope.
So let me just go back. So you have, for example, just to simplify things, oversimplify, you have maybe 3 different shows.
Yeah.
And you'll do
for each age group.
Yeah, for each age group. And you'll do the show for like a few years.
Yeah, I'll rotate.
And then you'll, after a few years, you'll change and do the next show for a few years.
Yeah.
Then you'll bring the next show.
Yeah.
So that if they book you after a few years, it's a
completely
different
show.
Ah.
Yeah.
All right, so just to jump in here, this is another brilliant idea, I reckon, and I've slightly got it wrong while I was listening to him live, but listening back to the interview, he's got 3 different shows, right? And for the first year, he does his first show. The second year, he'll do his second show. The third year, he'll do his third show. Then the fourth year, he goes back to his first show again. So if someone wants to book him a following year, he's got a new act. He can say, yes, it's a whole new show this year. Brilliant idea. All right, let's get back to Bernardo.
Because I get a lot of repeat bookings.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, to cycle.
Yeah.
Nowadays, there is also different kinds of entertainment competing for the dollar.
Yeah.
And more entertainers too. But what I always say is there's always a place, so long as you do a good show, you advertise well, there's always a place for you. There's enough of pie to go around for everyone.
Has the market changed over the 30 years?
Before, I would say it's probably about, no, before 97 and handover, I would say probably 90% expatriates.
Right.
With wealthy Chinese.
Yeah, so if you don't know history, in before 1997, Hong Kong was controlled by it was a British colony.
Yeah.
And then in 1997, the British left, and it's part of China.
Yeah.
So you're saying before 1997, it was the expats,
yeah,
the British
and so the majority of the shows were in the mid-levels area,
yeah.
Stanley, Repulse Bay, the Peak.
Yeah, yeah.
And then after the 90s, it started changing. So now, because I'm bilingual, so I can do my shows in English and Cantonese.
Mm.
And sometimes clients will say, oh, can you do both? I said, sure, just charge you double. Yeah. You've got to choose your language medium, you know. I mean, you're not hiring me as a linguist here, right? And then, so now I would say the majority of shows are for Cantonese.
Mm.
But it's funny because I work also for a number of agencies, and if a client books an English-speaking magician,
yeah,
it will cost $500 surcharge.
Right.
So this concept of language, almost a kind of a snobbery in terms of language.
That's right.
And a lot of locals will hire and pay extra money for an English-speaking magician because it elevates their performance. There's a lot of local magicians who can't really speak good English. And in children's shows where you need to interact, for example, a juggling show, maybe not so much talking, they can get away with it. But a magic show where it's constant, my act is an interactive patter act. And so you need to be quite fluent in English, so the kids will catch you up.
Yeah.
And parents will be embarrassed. So being bilingual has actually been quite beneficial to me.
Yeah, that's interesting though. I mean, that you basically hit on my whole reason for working in Southeast Asia. I went to Singapore, and every time I went on stage, they'd go, all the way from London, it's Big Ben! Of course, I was living in Singapore, but the fact that I was this white guy doing these shows meant I could charge more. It's not fair.
No, it's not. It's definitely not.
And it's the same in Hong Kong. Because I'm a white guy, I can charge more.
Oh, definitely.
Just to be serious, as a Filipino, do you feel...
I've got stories to tell you about that.
Yeah,
let me tell you my favorite story. I was booked for a gig in Triganta Path in mid-levels. And as I was carrying my magic case, I was stopped by security.
Okay?
It was a Gurkha. An ex-Gurkha, and he said, I'm sorry, can I ask your nationality? I said, yeah, I'm Filipino. And they said, no, sorry, can you take the service lift? And I looked at him and I said, excuse me? And he pointed to this sign, and I remember today, it said, dogs and Filipinos not allowed.
Okay? Oh, my God.
Dogs and Filipinos are ranked below dogs, okay?
Oh,
and so I called my client. I called my client, and I said, I'm sorry, I can't deal with this, right?
Yeah.
And he said, well, sorry, but this is the rule here. So, you know, just do us a favor, mate, and take the service lift. And I said, no way. And so I just left the show.
Yeah.
And that was one. And another one's even worse. It was a very, it was a really big do, a luxurious do in Aberdeen Marina Club. And it was hosted by this Chinese guy from mainland. And when I came in to start, you know, with my case, looking for the client, he said, oh, you know, he's saying to his friends, oh, we're so lucky to have Bernard. He's one of Hong Kong's top magicians. And we're so fortunate he's come for our son. I was thinking, yeah, blah, blah, blah. I said, can I set up, please? And the only place to set up was in the lavatory, okay, to change.
Yeah.
And so I went to the lavatory to change. And they didn't know I was there. So came the client with a friend of his. And they were talking. And his friend said to him, he said, I was inside. And
he
said, oh, that magician that you hired, is he local? He doesn't look local. He said, no, he's a Filipino. And he said, you know, these Filipinos, they're apart from being prostitutes and musicians singing cover versions, what are they good for? And I just opened the door and I said, excuse me? And he said, I wasn't referring to you. I said, I'm half Filipino.
Yeah.
And I'm hugely insulted. He said, well, I didn't mean that. And I said, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do your show.
Yeah.
And, you know, okay, the show must go on and professionals, but I think that everyone has a breaking point, has a point where dignity, and you have to ask yourself whether those values where the values that you hold close to you are worth the money. And when I feel personally insulted, I won't do the show. That's in my early days. Now I'll probably, there'll be more subtle ways to get around it. I probably would finish the gig and then let him know what I felt afterwards. But, you know, I was young and impetuous. And, you're very right. But, you know, being a teacher, I was teaching in an international school, and I was called in by the principal a couple of years ago. He said, "Mr. Renner, we have a complaint from a parent, and she would like her daughters removed from your class and put in another class." And I said, "So what did I do wrong?" And he said, no, it's because you told them that you're Filipino." And the mom said, "You know, if I wanted my kids to be educated by a Filipino, I'd give them to the maid." And I said,
excuse me,
but that's a personal insult to me and the mate. We're both professionals in what we do.
Yeah.
And I have 2 degrees, 2 masters. I've been teaching for over nearly 30 years, and my English is impeccable. And yet, because of my skin, I'm regarded as someone who can't speak the language. Let me tell you that the Philippines is the country in Southeast Asia with the highest literacy rate, with the highest number of universities per capita. A lot of these so-called Filipino helpers who come, they're all college graduates, they're pharmacists, they're elementary school teachers.
They are so educated.
But they can't earn a living here. Oh. So what are you going to do, right?
Yeah. God.
So we come up across that. And so what I teach my kids in school is empathy and tolerance.
Yeah.
And everyone is equal.
Yeah.
And but it's very hard sometimes.
Do you find that people won't want to pay you as much a fee? You talked about a white guy in that company gets $500 more, and you will never get that extra $500 just because of the color of your skin.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's outrageous, isn't it? The 21st century. That is wrong.
And Hong Kong's supposed to be Asia's world city. Don't give me that crap. We're still a backwater village mentality
place.
That's
awful.
It is. Nothing
God, wow! I mean, I'm lucky because I'm on the flip side. White face, pay more money.
Yeah,
well, I've got it made. Luck for that.
Yeah, I've struggled with this all through my career as a teacher, as a magician. I remember one girl in grade 8 in one school asking me, "Mr. Rano, can I ask you a question? Why is your skin so dirty? You know, do you take baths?" And one girl said, "Oh, he's going to be really angry." I said, "Oh, no, I'm not angry with you. I just feel very sorry. Because you see the world in black and white, and you don't realize that the world is a kaleidoscope of colors.
There you are.
You won't get it."
Right? God. Wow.
It's sad. But, you know, there you go.
Now for something completely different. I've seen you use a headset mic, and at a 2009 corporate brunch, you had a handheld mic hanging from your neck. What kind of microphone is your favorite?
Probably the headset mic.
Yeah.
The handheld one, sometimes it's normally corporate gigs or larger gigs where they have their own sound system.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You use the one that's already been sound checked.
Yeah. Yes. And so I have a mic holder that I carry around with me. It's just a very simple one made from a coat hanger. And
that's one of my favorite things, the clothes hanger.
Yeah, and so I just put it in. But for me, because as a juggler, you know, we need our hands.
Yeah.
So holding on to a mic is...
You can check this out. I'll give some pictures. Yeah, you can turn a clothes hanger, make a little loop, hold the mic in
and
there.
And you have a perfectly serviceable mic.
Yeah.
And environmentally conscious.
Yes. Okay. Something I like is that during your shows, you often mention the venue's name a lot, which just pleases the client. So I saw a video of you, and you're always like, the Caribbean Coast, which is a venue. The Caribbean Coast, the Caribbean Coast. Do you do this? You do this on purpose?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I
do.
Think it's a great idea.
You need to help to endorse the venue as well, especially if they're the ones booking you.
Exactly. Yeah. If the venue's booked you, any way you can endorse them during the show.
And it's also like when I'm doing private parties, at the end of my show, I always say, "Thank you very much for watching the show, and please do me a favor. If you enjoyed the show, had a good time, had a good laugh, I want you to give all the grown-ups a nice round of applause, give all the adults, all the staff, and especially Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so for being so kind to host this show. Let's give them all a nice round of applause." So again, at the end of the show, it's not about me.
Is that actually the last thing you do in your show?
Yeah, that's my last spiel. And it's always, you know, give a nice round of applause to the parents. Yeah. And it's important because they're chuffed, they get their moment in spotlight.
Yeah.
And everybody's happy.
Yes, Nothing, something here really specific. I've seen you do the colour changing wreaths, the flowery rings that you put into a bag and then change colour. Do your one's feathers always fall out Mine I have to keep on replacing it.
Oh, yeah. Actually, the best ones come from India.
There you are.
Unfortunately, quality control. So I have, I buy them by the dozen and just stock them. And after a few shows, I just switch. Because they also get a little bit yellowy because of the humidity in Hong Kong.
Oh,
now, I've tried very expensive ones, up to $150, right?
For
a Japanese company, and they manufacture these out of pure, feathers and whatever. But still,
you still filter bits.
You still have the same, and they're too thick. So that bag containing the reeds. In their multitudes, they become too bulky. Whereas
I'll put a link to this trick later on. But it's basically the trick where you have a red flower or a white flowery ring, and you put it inside a bag, then you take it out, and it's changed colour.
And it finally changes to a multicoloured
ring.
Jumbo multi.
So you order in bulk from India.
Yeah.
What a great idea.
I always get them. It's like I always start my show with what I call the silver scepter, which is this metal. A silver metal stick that rises up and down on its own.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very cheap. They're only about like $10 US. But I buy half a dozen to a dozen because, you can change the elastic.
Right.
But like I said, I'm not an artsy crafty guy.
Right.
So I always keep two in my bag. Mm. So one snaps, then I just...
Oh, and the reeds from India, it's a ready made magi trick. You buy... It's in a loop.
Yeah.
It's already looped.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. As a magician, these are staples, so sometimes, they're expendables.
I never thought about buying it in bulk. That's a good idea.
Even if not in bulk, it's at least buy, two or three, put them aside.
Yeah.
Every trick that's in my show, I have two spares.
Oh,
because,
that's a good
idea. You don't want it to, all of a sudden, not to be there. Like I said, my shows are cycled, so for 1 year, this is the show that I do, and then I pack it away for the next 2 years, and then the fourth year, I will bring it back again.
Wow.
I might update it a little bit, the story, depending on what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, I do the SpongeBalls.
Yes.
And you remember last year, I think there was a craze for Pokemon.
Yes.
And so I just adapted SpongeBall using a bit of Tippex, and I created little Pokemon balls. And so it was the same trick, but just for a different audience.
Oh, right. So the SpongeBalls, put them Tippex, make it half of it white, and it becomes a Pokeball.
Yeah.
Tell me about the banner you have at your shows. What is printed on your banner?
My logo, basically.
Yeah.
Bernardo Magic, and then and the banner is two sides, because one side will have the logo is the same, the artwork is the same, but the subtle difference is on one side it's Bernardo Magic with my website and my phone number.
Yeah.
The flip side is interchangeable for different agencies, because you're not allowed to self promote.
That's
so
right.
So I promote the agency. Mm. Bernardo Magic, courtesy of...
And then you just fill in the name.
Yeah, I don't want to give them free ad.
Yeah.
And so, because sometimes agencies, they will have their own staff to monitor, to see whether you are passing out cards. And
that's right.
And that's ethical. I mean, that's to be unethical. If you got the booking through an agency, then you refer it back to that agency.
Yeah, exactly.
And, or else, if they contact me, I ask them where they saw me, and if they got me from... They got a friend... or something is related to the agency, I will send back 10% of my fee back to the agency.
Yes.
Because, but a lot of people don't. I've seen entertainers hand out their own business cards in agency
That's
shows.
That's terrible. Because
that's not on.
The agency, if you're good to the agency, that will give you a lot of bookings.
Yeah.
If you give one card to one client, you might get one booking one year.
And you lose the agency.
And you lose the agency.
Yeah. And supply and demand, there are more entertainers. There's more entertainers than there is a demand now. So you're just cutting yourself out. And it's not the right thing to do.
So your banner, one side, if it's your own show, you've got your own contact details.
Flip side.
You turn it over.
It's the
and the
agency.
Other side, it's got your name, but it's got the agent. You can write the agency's name on it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. And does your banner, I can't really tell from your videos, how does it fit? Is there a stage box behind you or a table behind it? How does it...
Sometimes it just clips on, to the front of my my table. I'm using a more simplified setup now, which is basically just two suitcases. So I'm in and out. My setup's 5 minutes.
Right.
Either way, because I've seen entertainers and they spend 30 minutes setting up for a show and then breaking it down again. And like if I've got multiple gigs, I've got to be ready to go. So everything as I'm finishing a trick, I'm actually folding it and packing it for the next trip, the next show.
Right.
So like my silks, I won't just throw them in the box. They fold up, and so they're nice. It's my pet peeve are wrinkled silk handkerchiefs. When they come out, this beautiful box, but they're all, it's like, they've been there for years.
Yeah.
I always iron my silks, I always press them. It's the impression that you give.
I find, worst comes to the worst, just fold them up a bit and sit on them.
True. Yeah. But then also, an entertainer taught me, if you roll them up in one of these, like, poster tubes, then they will keep as well. So that's what I've been trying to do lately.
So, you have two suitcases, did you say? Yeah. That's quite hard to carry.
No, let me show you.
Oh, he's going to show me.
He's just going to show me.
He's
off to show me. He's getting his stuff. Alright, and we're back. Okay, so Bernard was showing me his setup. You've got a collapsible laundry bag.
Yeah, basically,
basket.
Yeah.
But I have the same thing.
Yeah, but with the kids kind of cutting character.
So my one is pure black, which is nice and simple for me for any event. But your one's great. This is great for a kids party because yours is a colorful cartoon characters.
It's just some weird Japanese.
So this again, it folds flat so it can fit in your bag, and then it pops open and into a bag so you can put all your stuff in there. Yeah. And if necessary, you can just leave.
It's basically the throw all after my tricks. It just goes back in there.
And you've got
two suitcases.
A collapsible magician's table so you can unfold.
Basically, it's a computer stand.
Yes, a computer stand.
Yeah, it's a computer stand.
You've got. Two small suitcases, and I've seen your little banner. Yeah, one side is your own content details. On the back, is you can just stick a little label to show whichever company
you're
hiring.
Different agencies, so just double stick tape, and that's it.
That's brilliant.
And advertise as well.
That's so cool.
Thanks.
Wow, where did you get your costume? What about your rainbow waistcoat?
It's evolved. I mean, I did the old tux thing and colorful shirts and things, and then I just wanted something that was more me. But because it's rainbow color, because people think that I'm a spokesman for Pride.
And,
but it doesn't matter to me. So what I want is something that's very colorful. Mm. And so red pants and a colorful waistcoat. And a t-shirt that normally does the job for me. So I actually, there's a lady who tailor makes them for entertainers in the UK. I can't remember her name now, but she has a website, and so I order from her.
I'll check it out later.
I'll send you a link.
Yes. Yeah. Do you have any special requirements for your costume? Any special pockets?
No, I don't. I very rarely go to my pockets, actually.
Right.
Maybe just for one or two tricks. Mm. But I very rarely go to my pockets. Everything is self-contained.
And we mentioned this earlier, before we started recording. I've taken to wearing a black t-shirt, so the sweat stains don't show.
Yeah.
How about you?
Exactly the same. And I would recommend Dry Fit, Nike Dry Fit or Adidas Dry Fit.
So this is it's what like athletes use or runners.
Yeah, because you will sweat.
You will sweat.
And it dries fast.
It dries really fast.
And, I think it's very suitable for Hong Kong weather. And even in cooler weather, I have a Dry Fit too, but a long sleeve. And I would normally roll the sleeves up to elbow area so that I have this mobility. This concept of magicians hiding things up their sleeves.
Yes.
So when you roll the sleeves up, it kind of... Yeah, it kills one possible way. You know, audience only needs one plausible reason, even if it's the wrong one, to justify that there's no magic.
Yes.
So what we try to do is eliminate all those.
So you'd recommend as a magician rolling up your sleeves?
Yeah.
Okay. You have some really great verbal gags and jokes. for example, you've got something I saw, you're tearing the paper and it's just a terrible trick.
Yeah.
Terrible tricks.
Yeah, a lot of them actually is taken from, like I said, I used to do cabaret and adult, and so it's just kind of like a little amended for kids. And some of the jokes are aimed at the adults in the audience.
Yes, you've got some like, if you don't have a family,
you can just go home and work on that. No, you can work on this trick, and if you don't have a family, just go home and work on that. Or the magic wand that breaks, and I hold it up and wave it and say, "Do you gentlemen have this problem?" "No, it's always the other guy, or it's never you."
Oh, the floppy wand.
Yeah. So, one parent compared my show to Disney for adults. Disney for adults. I thought that was quite a...
Yeah, you do seem actually very... capable of adapting your show for different
and
for different audiences.
Yeah, actually, some of the tricks can be adapted for different. For example, the sponge balls, the cut and restored rope, the Tonic Restore newspaper.
So give me, tell me what you have.
With just a different presentation, a different slant, you can do the show for different audiences.
Right. Yeah.
You just have to change the patter, the script.
Right.
Instead of the handling.
It can
work for different audiences.
For example, so basically you have different kinds of jokes if the audience is adults.
Yeah.
Okay. And how about for a different theme? You can change your show.
For a Christmas show. I have a complete separate Christmas show, which I charge a little bit extra for.
Yeah.
And normally for like corporate kids parties, staff parties, things like that. Mm. So I have a one for Halloween, one for Christmas, one for Easter.
Okay. So if a client calls you and says, how would you change your show if the client says, I want you to do an Easter show?
Oh, then I would say, all of the effects in the show is geared towards Easter and this idea of, Easter eggs and bunnies and flowers and things like that. And so everything, all the tricks of the games and everything is just orientated to that.
And if the client says, it's a Christmas show,
same spiel. But sometimes now what we're getting is political correctness creeping in. So sometimes it's not even a Christmas show, it's a happy holiday show. And so you have to avoid specific references to Jesus. But then, there's also calls for like gospel or church shows. So you can incorporate a Christian message in there too. But there are specialist magicians who do that. I don't really like to do things like that.
With children, you can constantly extend an item with the kind of the mistakes that you do on purpose, it's behind you, where is it? It's behind you, and that can go on and on and on. Are there any other great ways to interact and extend an item with adults? For example, when I was younger, I could flirt before it became totally politically incorrect with the Me Too campaign.
The old bra trick and the underwear trick.
Underwear, bras,
But we steer away from that now. Touching.
What was your old underwear trick?
You have these two handkerchiefs and you tie them together and you say the third one's going to disappear and appear between the handkerchiefs. And when you pull it out, it's a pair of jockey underwear bra.
Yes. Oh, yes.
But, I think in the past 15 years or so, I wouldn't do tricks like that. Because I always think that if you offend even one person in the audience, then you've turned off the whole audience. And it's a cheap gag isn't worth turning off an audience.
Yeah.
So back to your question, I think for adults, I wouldn't try to pad out. So what I would do is I would convince us along the way because for adults, they have plausible reasons where, like for example, it's up your sleeve. So you roll up your sleeve and you take away that idea.
Yeah.
And so you have to build in these convinces so that what you're doing is taking away all possible solutions in their mind.
Yes.
And the only one left in their mind is, well, maybe there is magic. But I wouldn't use the kind of time fillers that I would use for kids shows.
No.
Or this repetition. So otherwise, you come across as being a bit silly.
Exactly. Yeah. It works fantastic for kids, but you wouldn't work in the same way for adults. Yeah.
I'd keep the show fast-paced and a lot more audience involvement. So, for example, a trick that uses maybe two audience, I would use maybe 5 to 6. And in that way, you fill up the stage a lot more. Yeah, there are ways in which you can take one trick. For example, the color-changing wreaths.
Yeah.
It's normally done with one. I would do it with 4 kids, each one holding a separate one.
Oh.
And the maestro holding the magic wand. And so what my idea is that you can either fill the stage with expensive props or fill them with human props.
Yeah.
And so my choice. And what parent wouldn't like the photo opportunity of taking a photo of their kid?
Yeah.
So like I have this trick called Christmas hats, where I have 6 kids on stage with me, each wearing a different colored Christmas hat. And so it's mind reading for kids, and they make a prediction, and the chosen colored hat is the one that ends up. And it's this trick that can play for 7 to 10 minutes, and it all fits into a little bag with 7 or 8 of these Santa hats. And that's it.
Wow.
Yeah. But it's a trick that I kind of collaborated a bit on it. It's like a signature trick.
It seems to me that you love doing kids' shows.
Very much so.
Do you prefer kids' shows to adult shows?
I do. I'll tell you why. Because adults are very blasé. They've seen it all, done it all. And, they also are unwilling to suspend belief.
Yeah.
So for them, it's a puzzle. Magic is a puzzle that it's an insult to their intelligence. They can't work it out. So it's like, kind of like, okay, I'm going to catch you out. That kind of mentality.
I always think being a close-up magician for adults is a very, very hard job to do.
Yeah, because you're basically interrupting them.
Yeah, you're interrupting them, and most adults don't really want to see the magic trick.
No, they don't. For kids, because they're already living in a world where anything can happen, their imagination. Mm-hmm. That's why Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, you know, is so popular. Yeah. Because children actually do believe that there could be magic. And so you've half won them over already.
They can so easily, even if they know in their heart of hearts it's not true, they can still suspend their disbelief and get really...
But the flip side is that children are brutally honest. And if your act sucks, they'll tell you. Your act sucks, man.
Yeah.
And so you got to have a bit of a thick skin to deal with kids. Because if you're lousy, they will catch you up.
A number of times my clothes have been a bit scruffy and my shoes dirty. It's like, oh, your shoes are so dirty. I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, you do. You're under a microscope in the kitchen.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have it any other way. Because kids are genuine. And if they like you, they really like you.
Yeah.
But adults, we learn to be polite. You're good. But, true. You know, it's different. Kids are genuine.
And
that's why I love performing for kids. And also, like I said before, no matter how bad the economy goes, you're never out of... even in SARS, I never lost gigs because, shows.
Again, if you don't know, it was about 10, was it 10 years? No, more than that.
2003.
Yeah.
So 15 years ago.
15 years ago, there was a terrible virus and swept through Hong Kong. It also got as far as Singapore. And I remember shows being cancelled, corporate shows. Yeah.
It's weird. Just performing behind a mask and all your kids. There was such a lack of contact.
Yeah. So, yes, kid shows. So were there any, were you influenced by any particular children's entertainers before you? Was there anything?
In Hong Kong? Two. Yeah. One was, as I said, this wonderful soldier.
Yes.
His name was Morris Roberts. When he left with the army, he actually gave me his magic table.
Brilliant.
Which I used for many years until it fell apart. And some of the routines that I use now came from him.
Mm.
With his blessing, and I performed almost like a tribute to this great man. He taught me a lot about professional children's entertainment, being a worker.
Right.
And another one was a magician that was in Hong Kong. He was a children's entertainer, but at the same time, he was a dog trainer.
Okay.
And his name was Ian Jackson.
Ian
spelled E-O-I-N.
Ian
Jackson.
E-O-I-N?
Yeah, Ian.
Ian
Jackson.
I-N.
Yeah, Ian Jackson.
That's a strange spelling.
It's a strange spelling. But I think he worked for the RAF, training dogs.
Yeah.
And he came to Hong Kong. So he always wore cowboy boots and a cowboy hat. And he went by the name of Jacko the Jester.
Oh, yes, I've heard of him, yes.
Yeah, Jacko the Jester. He's unfortunately passed away now. But I went to school with his son, Dawes Jackson, actually. And Jacko the Jester came to my school, I think my primary school, to perform.
Mm.
And I remember one day, many, many years later, when he'd already retired, he invited me to his home and we sat there and we talked for hours about magic in Hong Kong, and he gave me a few of his props, which I still remember to today.
Yeah.
So he was great because he was the first magician that I saw advertising himself, and he did it by giving away a t-shirt to the birthday child with Jacko the Jester and his logo on it, which is something I've always wanted to do but never got around to printing.
It's quite expensive.
I think he had a
present.
Free size.
Yeah.
So any kid could wear it. But
yeah.
It was the first time that I saw promotional material. And he was very well known in the circuit. The problem was, he always smelled of dogs. And so clients would tell me, okay, so you can use the bathroom in the guest room. And I said, I'm sorry. He said, oh, well, the entertainer we had last year, he needed to take a bath because he smelled of dogs. I said, oh, that's Jacko. I said, no, I'm house trained. He inspired me because he was probably the first generation of children's entertainers here in Hong Kong, and it basically cornered the market. It was there was very few little competition for Jacko, and I think back in the 70s and 80s, he probably swept the market. And I was an up and coming magician then.
Wow!
I would rub shoulders with him in and out of gigs, but he was like the guru for me.
That's so amazing.
Yeah.
Now I think you work mainly without an assistant. Is that right?
Yeah. I don't know. I just believe a kid's show. Okay, I always say parents asking me, you know, oh, we got like 30 or 40 kids. Can you manage them?
Yeah.
As if they think it's an unmanageable feat. But yeah. I'm a school teacher by profession. So, you know, holding an audience of kids, the first thing you got to do is set down some ground rules at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because kids need boundaries. It's like, why is it safe to swim in a swimming pool? Because there are boundaries in the lifeguard.
So how do you control the kids?
Well, when I start the show, I say, okay, I like everybody sitting, you know, come up here, sit down in front of me, you know, sit on your bottoms, not on your heads. And then I say, okay, so let's see if everybody's here. Everybody's here, put your hands up, great. Everybody's not here, put your hands up. If you're not here, I can put your hands up. I say, okay, we're going to have lots of fun, lots of laughs in the next hour, but there's a couple of rules, okay? The first rule is, you know, you got to be sitting down. If you stand up, you block the people behind you.
Mm.
And, you know, if you ask a question, you know, raise your hand, you know, and... Mm-hmm. You know, just set some ground rules,
right.
And it's a reward and punishment. So the kids who follow the rules, they get some kind of reward, and those that don't, they're looking at them and they're going, okay. It's because
so like when you're playing games,
it could be a sweetie, it could be stickers if we're playing games,
yeah.
And it's very easy to manipulate the game so that the child that you don't want to win, oh, he's just missed out. Oh, hard luck. You know, oh, I called the number 5 and you had number 6. Oh, you were so close. And just keeping this kid hanging there for a long time, almost torturing him until you finally give him that sweet.
But why would you do that?
No, if he's being boisterous or he's doing
the boisterous kid, yeah.
Yeah, or he's a bully or he's an attention seeker. And so...
So he realizes he's slightly being punished in a very friendly
way.
Well,
in a way, it's like... The way we teach also is like if you follow, you know, a prescribed mode of behavior, yeah. Then you're rewarded for it.
Yeah.
It's almost a little bit of like psychology involved there.
So let me get this right. So say there's a child who's being too boisterous and is interfering with the show, so that it's stopping the show and the other kids can't see what's going on. So you might use this kid, or in a game, and kind of pick him out.
Well, I wouldn't pick him out, but I would...
If I got this totally wrong, you can...
Oh, no. Yeah, I know what you mean, but it's not actually a way of punishing. It's just a way of showing him that, you know, the kids that are following the rules are getting rewarded. So why isn't he?
Right.
And so he's basically got a choice.
Yeah.
Or if the kid is being outright rude to me, and that's something I won't stand, then I'll just stop and I'll say, you know, John, I'm very polite to you, and so, you know, please be polite to me. That's how we get along.
Okay, so I see. Yeah. So the other kids might be getting the candies quite quickly, but he's getting held up.
Yeah,
and then he realizes he better behave himself if he wants to get candies.
The moment he's behaved, then, miraculously, he wins the next round.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not a way of, you know, it's not a way of punishing, but it's just a way of kind of trying to get the kids to follow certain rules that make for a happier party for everyone.
Now, we already had a look at this, and unfortunately you can't really see it because this is a podcast. But as you don't have an assistant, how do you get all your props on at the start of the show and all your props and bags off when you finished?
Well, in a kid's party, basically you're setting up in front of the kids.
Yeah.
So you try to get there a bit earlier than the kids, and then you maybe have the birthday child, maybe a couple of his friends. So you offer them a deal. You say, okay, I'll show you a couple of tricks, and then, you know, you've got to go over there and play so I can set up for the show.
Right.
So you show them a couple of tricks, and then they go.
That's a great tip. Like,
or if you've got an older sibling, you just give them a prize, like a magic book, and you ask them, to, you know, can you just, you know, try to keep the kids away from me when I'm setting up. And they will, you know, it's like Machiavelli, right?
You make them the policeman.
Yeah, and so they're the right guy, not me. And like I said, I set up quickly in about 5 minutes. I break down quickly as well.
Mm.
And I just wheel it off stage. You can see my equipment's not a lot. The suitcase will close, and basically it's just my table and a pen and the laundry bag. And I'm at the backstage area where I can close up. I might need another 5 minutes, so total maybe 10 minutes.
You have got two suitcases. Do they? Do you put one on top of the
other? Yeah, one on top of the other.
So you've got one hand bring the suitcases and one hand's free.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, that makes sense.
Yeah. Because sometimes I think assistants, they can even get more in the way of a kid's show. Because the venue is sometimes not very spacious.
Right.
And too many people moving around in an area, it's not really necessary.
Yeah.
For
financially,
me,
it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, because you're going to have to pay the assistant.
Yeah, you're going to pay them fairly, and then, financially it doesn't make sense for me.
You don't really need it. It depends on what kind of show you do. Mm. For me, like I said, if I need an assistant, I'll use a kid from the audience, or a parent, or a teacher.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, just cue them and you got it.
How do you structure your kids' party? Is there a beginning, a middle, and an end to your your
definitely. So I would start with a warm-up, because what you're getting is you're getting a group of kids who may not gel as an audience at the beginning.
Yeah.
So you need to, that's why I like to start with games, because you mold them into this collective entity.
Games.
Yeah, I mold them into a collective entity before I do.
This is new for me, starting with games.
Yeah, I do. I start with games and so they get to know me. And also, it's not so scary at the beginning.
Right.
And they know that it's fun and they win a lot of prizes. And so I say, okay, so we finished with games now. Some of you won prizes, some of you didn't. But the most important thing, no matter whether you play games or any kind of competition, is to play fair and have a good time. Mm. You all did well, so give yourselves a big clap. We're going to move on to the magic show now. Remember the rule. You've got to be sitting down.
Yeah.
And just remind them of the rule. And then I said, I'm going to use a lot of people.
Do you find, though, if you're playing the games, it'll be harder to quieten them down?
I always liken a good performance almost like we're conductors in an orchestra.
Right.
So we control the tempo of the audience.
Yeah.
Because they got a lot of energy, you can't run off a whole series of high energy games. So I would run high energy game and then a game where they sit down.
Yes.
And it's like a guessing game. And then another game where they get up and dance.
Right.
And then sit down again.
Right.
My magic show is also created like that. I don't like you were describing some tricks where you get kids screaming behind your back. But sometimes it can degenerate into just cacophony of noise, and just mindless screaming and screeching.
Yes.
So you got to relegate it to so that you get the response that you want.
I think that's really important because it's quite easy to really hype the kids up.
Yeah.
But then it's very hard to get them to calm down. If they had tea
and lots of sugar.
Yeah.
And then it's like they're whirling around, bouncing off the ceiling, eating up the carpet.
So you might play a noisy wild game, but then straight away you'll try and calm down the quiet.
Or I would blend with a trick where I'm doing the magic, and then another trick where an audience member is doing the magic. Mm. And I would start the show, the magic show, with the birthday kid, and I would end with the birthday kid usually.
Right. How long are the games at the start?
I have three different show lengths, 45 minutes, 60 minutes, and 90 minutes.
Right.
What I call a magic party. It's a combination of games and magic.
Mm.
So in a 60 minute, which is the most popular package, 30 minutes of games and 30 minute magic show.
Right.
And if it's a 45 minute show, I'll do 20 minutes of games, 25 minutes. So it always gives it more magic. As I said, it's the magic element. And if it's a 90 minute show, then I'll do 45.
Because one of the things that I really missed when I converted from stage shows at corporate events and family days to going to birthday parties was that on a stage show I'd finish at 30 minutes of my big trick. It's like, yeah! And then at a birthday party, I do my stage show, basically, for about 30 to 40 minutes. It's like, yeah, the big trick finishes. And then I have 20 minutes of games afterwards, which is great in a way because that's when the kids get to stand up and they can run around after sitting down for a while and let off steam. But on the other hand, it does mean that my big trick was quite a long time ago, so you don't necessarily end on a high.
And also, another reason in psychology is because near the end of the party, other parents come in.
Yeah.
So if they come in and they see you playing, Simon Says, well, they can do that.
Yeah.
But the magic trick with the birthday kid and all the prizes and everything.
That's fascinating.
And so when parents come in to pick up their kids, this is what they're seeing.
Yeah.
And a big thank you to, John's mom and dad, give them a nice round of applause, because without them, we wouldn't have a show.
That's fascinating.
So other parents are going, whoa, okay.
That's very interesting.
It's timing.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of reasons why I structure the games before the magic. I know it goes against convention.
No, that's interesting.
Well,
why not? Yeah, that's very interesting. I like that. Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, you can try that.
Next game.
It's just a matter of, because like I always mention to parents, it doesn't matter the order. It's not the army here. So, as long as the kids have games and prizes and magic, it doesn't matter what order. Some parents are very finicky what they want.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, you're the performer. You're the expert. So basically you explain to them why it's better done your way. Most parents, because they don't know what they're doing half the time anyway, so they will listen to you.
What's your favourite noisy party game?
My favourite noisy party game?
Why not?
Probably a dancing game, probably.
Yeah.
Like corners.
But do you play music during your
I don't play any elimination games. Because
right.
there's nothing worse than a kid eliminated having to sit in silence for 10 minutes versus one.
Yes.
So, for example, when I play something like corners, then I have four spots, little round spots that I keep in my bag, vinyl spots, and then what they have to do is they have to collect counters. So the music plays and music stops, they run to a corner, I have four cards, 1, 2, 3, 4, and I hold up the card, and everybody's standing in that corner, like one, they would get a counter. And at the end of the game, all the boys and girls, the boy and girl with the highest number of counters will win the game. So theoretically, every kid is in, at the, even to the very end, they got a chance, right?
Okay.
But you, of course, fix it so the birthday kid wins.
Yeah.
It's very easy, but then the kids catch on, and they just follow the birthday kid. Yeah, so you have to think of something else, right? And I play music games, but a music game followed by a quieter game followed by another music
game. What's your favorite quiet game?
Favorite quiet game is probably what I call the picture game. And so basically, very simply...
He's just going off into his bag again, taking something out.
Okay, basically,
picture game.
I got lots of different of these made up, and the latest one, now, are superheroes, okay? So I got this standing here. And then I've made, again, it's just all downloaded and then printed out, laminated. I say, okay, so first of all, they have to identify all of these characters, right? Most of them get them except Robin. But I said, nobody really cares about
Robin.
Okay,
he's got about 8 superheroes.
Yes. So I said,
printed on
who's this
Apple,
guy?
And laminated.
And I said, this is Robin, but nobody really cares about him.
Okay.
Okay. And then I said, okay, so I've got the same superheroes that you can see here. Right.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all mixed
pack up. Of cards.
So all I'm going to do is I'm going to mix up the cards, and you have to guess which superhero is left in my hand.
Right.
At the end, and if you get the right one, you win. Okay.
Yeah.
If you get the wrong one, somebody else can have a chance. And then you say, but if I hold it like this, it's kind of a stupid game, isn't it?
Right.
You got Iron Man. So
yeah.
I'm going to do this. I'm going to turn around. I'm going to mix them up. And then I said, now remember, I don't choose boys and girls who shout. You know, it's Iron Man, it's Superman. And I don't choose boys and girls who come up and start jabbing. But if you're nice and quiet with your hands up, and I choose you, you get a chance.
Yeah.
So they're very quiet. So when I say shout, I say, I'm sorry, I'm not listening to you.
Yeah.
And so they say, Robin, you go, oh, I'm so sorry. And then they keep guessing until they hit the right one.
Right.
And then they get a prize.
Yeah, simple.
So it's a quiet game. And like I said, I got, I got so many different ones. I got like, a dinosaur.
Yeah.
Okay. I got, this is one for like preschoolers, because they're animals.
So basically,
and
these,
I got Christmas
these games.
One. I got Pokemon, when it was hit, Halloween.
Yeah, yeah.
And my favorite one for girls is, but I need to update it probably. It's Disney Princess. Because I've got to update it with like Elsa and the new ones, right? These are the traditional ones.
So basically, you've got these are games where the kids will be sitting down and just raising their hand and giving you guessing the answer and winning a prize.
And also my favorite one is this one. It's called The Longest Link. And it's so simple. Over here I said, okay, I've got a bag with Buzz. And it said here I've got all the stuff that you use to play the game. And then I said, okay, so these are links that teachers use in schools, teach colors and numbers, and when you join them, they get longer and longer.
Yeah.
This one's only 2, and then I got 3, 4, 5, 6, right? And I said, I have 2 kids come up here, and what we're going to do is going to mix up the chains, put them in my hand, each kid will pick one. The boy or girl with the longest chain is going to win.
Wow.
Okay, so you have a birthday kid, another one, and they just pick. And then you put it together, and John's won, give him a nice round of applause, a prize.
Yeah.
And then again.
Simple games, and the kids are sitting there. So it's almost like a show, this part. The kids are sitting down.
Yeah. And my warm-up is always musical... Oh, I haven't reset them. But musical colors or musical numbers. And I have these... I have these cards made up, laminated, with numbers from 1 to 30. And then in different colors. So if they don't know their colors, the numbers, they can use colors. And we just mix them up. Each kid gets one. Music plays. They pass them around, okay? And then they give one, take one back, and they go around. When the music stops, they hold up the cards, I choose a color, and everybody holding out the color gets a prize. Or if it's a number, I choose like 7, and then the next time I do 2 numbers, 3 numbers, 4 numbers, 5 numbers, 6 numbers. So the kids win prizes. It's like 5-10 minute game. And it warms them up, gets them a chance to move around, dancing around to music.
Yeah.
Good time. Simple.
Simple.
Simple. I don't need big stuff to do games.
Yeah.
I don't need huge, I don't need the big parachutes. It's not me. Everything is self-contained. Kids have a great time.
That's great.
Simple.
Yeah. Sorry for the bang there. I'm just placing my microphone back on the table. I hope you could hear that. So, yeah, he's got these... He's got games where the kids are sitting down...
Or dancing.
And like or said, dancing.
When they play
quiet
corners...
Quiet games, dancing games.
When they play corners, I have my 4 corner cards. number, and I just go around and I say, okay, this is corner number one for your French people, you know, and then this is corner number two for your French people, deux, and three, corner trois, and four, for your French people, four.
He's put out four different coloured circles in then, four parts of the room, four corners.
And then we play the music, and then... the object of the game is collect counters.
I should pay him for this. He's giving me a show.
So the boy girl at the end of the game with the most counters wins. And so they stand in the middle and the music plays, they dance around, music stops, they run to a corner.
Yeah.
And then I have four cards, 1, 2, 3, 4. Hold them up, this corner number one. Everybody in corner number one gets a counter. And back to the middle again, blah blah blah.
Oh.
And then you play 4 or 5 rounds, and at the end of the game we count the counters. And usually what you see is something really cute. Kids with like 1 or 2 counters pass to the birthday kid. So the birthday kid ends up with 5 or 6. I think that's so cool. And also they're booking their place for next.
So you've got the four different corners, and the kids have to run to one to a corner.
When the music stops, they just run to the corner and stand it.
And then you so-called randomly take out a number.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4.
And if they're a number one, then they get some prizes. They get the counters, the coin.
They collect counters. And at the end of the game, they cash in the counters for, like... the kid with the most cards will win a sticker or something. So here are my number cards, 1, 2, 3, 4.
There you go.
Yeah, and so I can control. Like, you know, sometimes they all run to one corner, and I hold them and I say, think about the kids. The game is over like in 5 seconds. And then they move, and then one kid we cut in the middle, and I'm saying, so what's this, corner 2.5? One kid will be standing there not moving. I said, man, this is for Mr. Statues, kid. You're going to move, right? So, trust me, I'm a magician, corner number 2. And he goes there and I said, corner number 3. Oh, I'm so sorry, never trust. Yeah. So as a parent would drag them to the corner, I said, never trust a grown-up. Right, and then I'll call the wrong number. So basically you can control it.
Yeah.
So I try to control it so the birthday kid wins.
Yeah.
It's fixed. And then sometimes I look at the audience and I say, it's fixed, you got a better way? I want to be back next year. You know, it's kind of like tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
Everyone's laughing and having a good time. So you can see, pack small, play big.
Yes, pack small, play big. Yeah, and also,
the props are dead. We bring them to life.
Yeah. Right?
We're the entertainers. We can take anything and we can make it really super fun. So you can see myself simple.
Come, sit down. This is going to be a weird podcast. We're going to be loud and we're going to be quiet while you're off.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. I'll do some editing. It's cool. So, yes, games, then show.
Yeah.
And.
At the end, I pass out my promotional material.
But do you have a grand trick that you finish with?
Nah, usually it's a trick with a birthday child.
Yes.
They either paint a picture by magic or they produce a birthday cake by magic.
And then you said give out your...
My promo material.
At the end?
Yeah, at the end. As
prizes?
No, at the end of the show I said, okay, so how many of you didn't get a magic money would like some?
Yes.
Or who didn't get an activity sheet and would like some?
Yeah.
And so they all line and I just hand them out.
Oh,
I said, okay, name and phone number, show this to your parents. Special rates on weekdays. We do bar mitzvahs, weddings, coronations.
As you pass it on to parents.
To kids. Or the domestic helpers.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
You got to be generous because I always say promo material sitting in a shelf doesn't do anything. So hand them out willy-nilly to everyone.
Yeah, give out 100, maybe 2 or 3 will get you a show next year.
Yeah, great returns.
Yeah. So you do use music in your shows.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. It's all controlled with a... I have an iPod.
That was my question. How do you control your music?
Julian.
You can tell me. You don't have to.
It's difficult.
Every time I ask him a question, he runs into his room.
Well,
come back.
Yeah, basically.
No one can see any of this.
Oh, that's true. But basically.
You don't have to describe it.
Okay, well, I use an iPad. iPod. And then the iPod is connected to, it's remote control, connected to my amplifier.
Yes.
And my wireless amplifier. And so I can just start and stop the music.
And where's your remote control? In your pocket?
Yeah. It's not a magic trick. So my remote control is here.
Yeah.
It's just off and on.
Yeah.
I'm just controlling it with this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I only use music for the games. So the magic show. Ooh. I had an intro. For the magic show, I have an intro, and then the rest of it is all
talking. The wand just sort of exploded out of his hands.
The lower part of my...
And then anatomy. Hit him in the groin.
Yeah. So my voice goes suddenly very high. I'm not auditioning for Vienna Boys Choir.
I'm okay. Talking about things going wrong.
Yes.
But do you have any props that go wrong quite often? Is there anything that sticks in your mind?
Playing, the rabbit. One time I was doing, this is like maybe 15 years ago, I was doing shows back to back, and one show, it was pretty hot, and one show was in Discovery Bay. And my rabbit looked okay, and then I loaded him into the production box, and then I got to the second show. Well, he was in his case until 5 minutes before the show, then I load in. And then I always used the rabbit in the first trick so that I could put him back safely. But then I looked at the rabbit, and it was dead. It died. And I looked down there and say, and the kids are going, oh, what's he going to pull out of the hat? I said, I'm going to pull out a freaking dead rabbit. And then I said, what to do? And then I looked up in my heart and said, I'm sorry, Lord, for what I'm about to do. And I just took the ears and I just yanked the rabbit. And the rabbit was going like this. And they go, oh, live rabbit's here. Today, I feel really bad about it. But what could I do, right? I couldn't produce this stiff rabbit. So I just shook it vigorously. And the thing was like, I guess rigor mortis hadn't set in yet, right? So it was like wriggling around. The kids going, yeah. They just kind of put it away. And,
that's brilliant.
Yeah, horrible. Yeah, so that's like the ultimate trick that went wrong. But the show must go on, right?
Yeah,
I feel bad about it to today. I really do. And I'm sure that the SPCA or someone will be ringing me up tomorrow after the podcast.
The rabbit was already dead.
It died somehow from heat exhaustion. That's the only time, because I loved my rabbits. I treated them as pets. But yeah. I don't know what went wrong that day. Maybe it was too hot. I had a case. Yeah. I had water and everything. But somehow, I don't know what happened.
These things happen. Well, it's going to die sooner or later.
Yeah, but I do feel very guilty about that even to today.
Yeah. God.
Yeah, that's a bad one.
So that's a live prop going wrong in a show.
Yeah.
Wow.
But like I said, I have backups for most of my props. So if something goes wrong, then I can probably sort, but I test everything before the show.
You don't normally pull another live rabbit out of your bag.
No. But I do try to have contingency backup for everything. But sometimes you just gotta wing it. I would say magic for kids is kinda like jazz magic.
Yeah.
I don't go with you were asking about structure. I don't go with a set routine. I go with maybe 7 to 8 tricks, of which I would do maybe 4 to 5.
Yeah.
And depending on the audience, the energy levels, I would just mix and match them.
They're
openers, middles, and closers.
Yes.
So I would just mix and match depending on the kid. Because the kid at the beginning could be very extroverted, but then when the kid comes up to help, the birthday kid, he freezes on the spot.
Yeah.
And so you got to change the trick, because the trick that would require a more active audience member will fall flat.
Yeah.
It becomes basically a human prop holding onto things.
Yeah. What's your backup? If the kid is super shy, what's your backup?
Well, normally a lot of problems can be prevented by asking parents beforehand. Like, is there anything I need to know about your kid?
Yeah.
Oh, if they say they're shy, then I would use his friends first, so that he will see that. Oh, it's actually the magician is not going to chop my head off or anything.
Yeah.
It's just fun.
Yeah.
And then I would use him in a trick with his best friend.
Yeah.
Or his brother or his sister, or elder sibling.
Yeah.
Who feels often neglected on the big day anyway.
Yes.
You score brownie points with them too. And that's another reason for doing the games first. So the kids get a sense of your personality, so they will loosen up. But if you start the show with this mysterious Mandrake the magician with the handlebar mustache look, you're going to scare the shit. And probably, parents would have said, you're going to have a magician, he's going to chop your head off, and he's going to make you disappear, change you into a frog. And I said, yeah, thanks. Yeah. That's a legacy that I can't fill.
Okay. How about really weird venues? 30 years, you must have had some strange. I find going onto a little tiny boat really hard.
Yeah,
tiny boat.
Yeah.
Like a tiny room where you can't even stand up with three kids.
I remember one time being told to set up in this little toilet cubicle. And
show?
Yeah, my show had to be set up in a toilet cubicle of this very luxurious clubhouse. And I said, if you hired Tom Jones to come and sing, would you tell him to wash his hair in the bog? Seriously, right? And I think sometimes they as entertainers, we're belittled. We're we're not deemed to be that important.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So, yeah. In terms of strange venues, boats, trams to me are difficult.
God,
I've done tram parties, which
I
don't really
tram parties.
Yeah, I hate shows now, and I won't take them. Those in McDonald's and Pizza Hut,
right.
Because of the fact that you can't have privacy. Because it's almost like a public show, but they're paying for a private show.
Right.
And also, those nowadays, these shows done in venues where It's like an entire kind of games area, bouncy.
Oh, yeah. There's so much going on.
Yeah, and bouncy castles are the nemesis. I would insist on deflation of the bouncy castle before
there
the show.
There you go. You,
not even Copperfield can compete with bouncy castle. You might as well just jack it in.
Yeah.
So, and parents always come with this excuse, it's impossible to deflate, it takes too long. 5 minutes down, five minutes up.
Quite
one
quick.
Switch that does it. Oh, the toy company won't allow it, so they don't need to know, right?
Yeah.
Off, on.
Yeah.
No, and it goes for a better show, but... You know, the trick is not to package yourself as a prima donna. It's like, it's for the good of the show for your kids.
Yes.
It's not for me. I can perform anywhere, but actually not. And another venue that I don't like is outdoor when you're staring straight into the sun.
Oh, it's tough.
Those are awful too. But
I
tend now to be at a stage of my career where I tend to pick and choose. Because I'm a semi-pro, so I don't rely on it for 100% of my
income.
That's
true.
So I can be a little bit more selective.
Yeah.
And I understand entertainers that it's their livelihood.
I can't
really
be. I take everything.
Yeah.
I can.
So I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying for me, certain venues are too much of a pain.
Yeah, to be worth the price.
I'm also going out to Outlying Islands and Discovery Bay.
Mm.
I charge double because I lose a show. If I go there, potentially two shows becomes one because of the traveling.
Yeah.
And parents, some understand and some don't.
So yeah.
It's like...
After 30 years, do you ever get nervous before a show?
Every show. And I think it's a healthy, positive, nervous energy.
Yeah.
Because without that, it's like fine-tuning before a performance. If you don't have it, it means you're complacent.
Yeah.
And if you're complacent, probably something's going to go wrong.
Yeah.
So I look forward to the nerves, but not to the point where... You know, you're sweating to the fact that you can't do it.
Yeah.
I think that...
What makes you most nervous? For me, the most nervous thing is when I have two shows close together, quite far apart, so I've booked a minivan to get me there, but I'm still not quite sure if I'm going to get to the next show on time.
Normally I try to buffer an hour and a half per show now. But before, when I would like be a human pinball machine bouncing off one to another... I would do like four or five shows in a day.
Yeah.
Sometimes one in the Peak, next one's in Stanley, and third one's over in Kowloon. Yeah. But I think your question of what would make me most nervous is if there are very few kids in the show.
All right.
Sometimes like maybe I need three or four and it's already starting time.
Yeah.
And as you said, maybe there's another gig, so I can't wait too long.
Yeah.
But parents expect you to be waiting like it's. That your time is not important, but their time is.
Yes.
I remember being late 3 minutes to one gig, and I got a rollicking from the client, and I said, "Please, I've gone through two tunnels to get here, and you know, if you keep rattling on me, I can't concentrate. If I can't concentrate, I can't do a good show."
Yeah.
They were going on about their 3 minutes, and I'm just saying, "Look, I'll give you back the 3 minutes of time.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't the problem, but please, I'm an entertainer. You're affecting my
tough.
You're affecting my personality, my temperament now, and it will affect the show.
Yeah. What's your favorite transportation around Hong Kong?
Oh, I always take taxis. Because number one, I don't like to be hot and flustered before a show.
Yeah.
And number two, my equipment, you know, I don't want to be, because like I said, I've got claustrophobia, so I'm really afraid of the crowds and enclosed places.
Oh, okay.
I really do. I don't like crowded places, so that's why I need to go by taxi.
Right.
And I need to explain it to parents. That
right.
They've got to slap on extra. Because I don't drive. I've never learned to drive. I never found it necessary in Hong Kong.
Me neither.
Yeah. Public transport is great.
Have you always worked solo? Or have you ever worked part of a double act or part of a...
Well, when I started, I was doing a lot of cabaret work in nightclubs and stuff. I have an assistant. I would do the old zigzag, you know, cutting women to three... And all of that stuff. But I figured very early on that that's not me.
Mm,
it's not my style.
Yeah.
I like to interact. I like to talk. And I love kids. So kid shows was, for me, a natural.
Yeah.
And it's something that, fortunately, I'm quite well known for in Hong Kong. I'm giving a lecture to a very prestigious magic club in Manila later on this year. And also
bowing down again, clapping.
And one in Angeles City, too. Just sharing with them. I don't really call it lecturing. It's just a sharing.
Yeah.
Yeah, sharing of like my philosophy and my techniques in kid show. What makes a good kid show effect? What you know? What's marketing all about? Things like that.
Yeah, well,
I call it kid show biz because we can't forget the biz part of the kid show.
Show biz, yes.
Yeah. The biz is as important as the show.
Yeah. Wow, fantastic.
My pleasure.
Really good.
Really, my pleasure. It's an honor to have the privilege to join the pantheon of greats, including a stripper and.
Oh yeah, we never mentioned stripping, huh?
It only happened to me once. I was doing a gig and they expected, it was a hen's party, and they expected a stripper. And so when I came on, they said, come on, show us your magic wand. And I took it out. They said, no, one in your hands. I freaked out. I think I was only like 25 and I couldn't handle it. I was just screaming.
I should have hired Mike Abbott.
Mike Abbott. But as he told you in his podcast, that one show he'd be a stripper and then he'd got to run the kid show. But his kid shows were very different. They were almost run in a military fashion with whistles and and it's almost like Sergeant Major bucking out drills.
Styles.
Yeah, it worked for him, but for me never.
Yeah.
I would never envisage using a whistle.
Yeah.
But I read that was it you who used. You keep a whistle in your bag.
I think I do. Yeah.
I never used a whistle.
No, I hardly ever use it, but it's there. Like.
But I've seen entertainers use it.
Especially for roving events, I often like throw a whistle, just come through the crowd on my unicycle, blowing a whistle.
Well,
there.
If you're strolling entertainment, then you probably do. But for me, you know, I'm fixed there, so I won't. I won't need the use of a whistle. But what I would stress is amplification. Because I've seen entertainers and they try to do a gig without amplification and it's lost. And the moment audience can't hear you, you've lost them.
You're talking about using a microphone.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Even in a kids' show with 20 kids, I'd use my microphone. Right, because number one, it saves my voice. And our voice is the most valuable asset.
Mm.
So for me, double duty. Because as a teacher, I also need my voice. So amplification is important. The second thing is... there's no need to shout over the kids. You just increase the volume a little bit and you've got that control.
Yeah.
And also when they see a mic, you're a professional. You know, you're like what they see on telly.
Right.
You know, you've got that headset mic. Madonna uses that. And you know, all the singers use it. So you must be good. You got a mic.
Interesting.
So it's just psychology as well.
Because I go back and forth. Because I find when I can't use a headset mic because I have too many hats and too many things come on and off my heads during the show. So I can't use a headset. So I have a clothes hanger and a handheld wireless handheld mic.
How about a lapel mic?
I don't like that because
it rustles.
I do a lot of taking costumes off and climbing in balloons, so that wouldn't work. So I ever had to have a handheld mic. But I find with a handheld mic hanging in a clothes hanger, I tend to bend my chin down and I'm not really projecting. So sometimes I like to just get rid of the mic and just to be like an old fashioned actor projecting as well. So I go back and forth.
Mm.
But my voice was the first thing to kind of wear out on me.
Mm. Yeah, for me, I don't really like raising my voice, so the mic helps a lot.
Yeah.
And like I said, it comes an authority.
Yeah.
You've got more authority when you've got a mic.
Brilliant. Yes. Once again, so good.
My pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're wrapping up here with Bernard, but very important. Because this, although you like to use word of mouth, do a good show, get more bookings. This is a podcast. People listen to this on the internet. So if people want to see you on the internet, your website, your Facebook pages.
Sure. Well, my website is www.bernardomagic.com. That's BERNARDOMAGIC, one word, and then .com.
Yeah.
And my Facebook page, just look Bernardo Magic.
Yeah.
And you key in Bernardo Magic and you will find it. And if you're on App Store, and you want an app with five amazing tricks that all link back to my website?
Yay!
Just type Bernardo Magic into the App Store and there'll be a free app that you can download on your iPhone. If you haven't got an iPhone, I'm not really talking to you.
Brilliant. Thank
what do you use, a Samsung? Get out of here. You're out. Seriously.
Oh, lovely.
So anyway.
There we go.
This was Meet the Entertainers and I am Big Ben. Each episode takes a surprisingly large number of hours to prepare, record and edit, and check, and re-edit, and re-record, and edit again, and throw in the bin, and mend my computer, and take it out of the bin, and redo it from scratch, and then post it again. So, if you're getting something out of this series, here are three things you can do. Number one, you can financially support this podcast by going to www.thebigbenshow.com/podcasts and making a financial donation of any amount you like. Number two, subscribe or share these podcasts or give me a good review on iTunes. And thirdly, get in touch. I'm always looking for more people to interview. My email is ben@thebigbenshow.com. Many thanks. Talk to you again soon.
Yeah, I'm in a taxi with you. Huh. And yeah, we're talking about when it rains and you can't get to a show. And it was pouring rain.
It was pouring with rain. I was in Discovery Bay and I had to wheel my equipment uphill because the woman gave me the wrong bus stop to get off in. And so when I get there, it's raining, and I said, look, can we move indoors? And she said, no, the kids are all covered. I said, yeah, but what about the entertainer? And she goes, well, you know, we paid money for you to perform. So, and I said, but you didn't pay for my props. If they go all wet and they get damaged, then who's going to pay?
You've got electrical, you've got a speaker.
Yeah, so finally they agreed to move indoors. But it just baffles me how there's no contingency plans for you know, some bookers, they have no concept of what it is to run a party or to cater for an entertainer. Really.
Oh, thanks.
So frustrating. Straight the hell out of it.